Chapter 48. Butch didn't like it. Any of it. They had been watching the newly reopened Leaping Trout pub in the centre of the Clannavale estate for the best part of 8 hours now. It seemed the whole estate was in there, except for those who were standing around drinking outside the front doors. The pub sat on what was effectively the central square, with roads leading off it at each corner. Butch, as site commander, had positioned a squad car on every side. She had also requested more support, but there had been none available. A couple of Northern Irish politicians were down on a visit to herald the new spirit of cooperation, and the Gardaí had to make sure none of the numpties got anywhere near them and set Anglo-Irish relations back a generation. Her orders had been very clear. Be respectful, but be visible. Their role here was twofold. Firstly, to make sure there were no further attacks from whoever was on the other side of this possible gang war. And secondly, not to let Tommy Carter or Franco Doyle out of their sights. The reality was, Butch hadn't actually laid eyes on either of them for a good 6 hours, since she had seen them enter the pub. It had occurred to her more than once that if the place had some kind of tunnel running beneath it, they were going to be made look like idiots again. Last she'd heard, D.I. O'Rourke had spent most of the day on the phone to the press, vehemently denying Tommy Carter's accusation of Garda collusion in the death of Jimmy Moran. Somehow, Carter had put them on the back foot yet again. Her and D.I. O'Rourke's walk out of the funeral would live long in her memory. The looks of pure hatred, the overpowering threat of imminent danger, regardless of it being in a church. The only experience that came close to it was the time she had escorted a child killer into court. Since then, the mourners had been drinking fairly solidly from what Cassidy could see. There had been comings and goings, and an increasing amount of looks in their direction from the group of men congregating outside the doors of the pub. She looked across the top of the car at Paul Norman, a uniformed guard so young he still had acne. She tried to give him a warm smile.
"Relax. I've not seen a fella look that terrified since my one attempt at heterosexual dating."
He tried to smile back, but looked in danger of ruining his undies. Cassidy internally scolded herself. She must remember that her sense of humour was an acquired taste. God, she missed Ginny Muldoon. The sooner they could nail Carter, the better. She looked across at the drinkers, sitting outside the front door of the Leaping Trout. The predictably dull attempts at banter had been directed her way, but she had long ago become impervious to such things. Once you had slammed a couple down, the rest of the herd learned the lesson. Right now, though, she would have welcomed it. Instead, she was getting excited looks and surreptitious conversations held in huddles. Sometimes, as a copper, it felt like your fate was entirely out of your hands. You knew what was coming in your very bones, but you were powerless to stop it. So far tonight, the only thing they'd had in their favour had been the policeman's best friend, the weather. Persistent rain, often quite heavy, had kept the mourners mostly inside, and the Gardaí out of their line of sight. Now the damn clouds had cleared to a cold, crisp night. Her mobile rang. D.I. O'Rourke.
"Cassidy, how's it looking?" "Not great, sir. The rain has stopped and the locals are looking restless."
"Any sign of our two boys?"
"Negative, sir. They were last seen entering the Leaping Trout at 3:45 p.m. Nothing since."
"Are we sure they're in there?"
Cassidy hated the question.
"We've not seen them leave, sir, so I assume so."
"Right. They'll be closing up soon anyway."
"I don't know about that."
"But the license?"
"Respectfully, sir, do we want to go in and enforce closing time in this situation? It'll be depicted as us not showing... Shit!" What is it?
A cheer rose from the drinkers. A group of what looked like teenage boys appeared out of one of the laneways off Sunnyvale Road. She was guessing at their ages, based purely on their builds, because she couldn't see any faces.
Males in masks, sir.
Another group appeared, clambering over a wall into Didsbury Road. Freddy Krueger mixing with a couple of Star Wars stormtroopers, Homer Simpsons, and at least three devils. In another context, they would have looked funny. In this one, they were anything but.
What are...
Cassidy ignored O'Rourke, reached into the car and grabbed the radio handset.
All cars, be alert, be alert. Masked youths, men, coming up Sunnyvale Road, maybe 20, and another dozen or so on Didsbury.
A rock hit the pavement to her left, coming from the crowd behind her on Sunnyvale Road.
Jesus, boss, exclaimed Norman.
We're okay,
said Cassidy, not believing it for a second. She put the phone back to her ear.
Sir, masked men throwing stones, currently blocking two routes out of the estate. Didsbury and Sunnyvale are closed off, and... Shit!
She barely registered the movement in the crowd at the mouth of Didsbury Road before there was the brief flash of a flame igniting. She watched the Molotov cocktail spiral through the air, scoring a direct hit on the patrol car parked on the left side of the pub. She saw Reardon and Brennan scamper away from it, unhurt, at least for the moment. The two groups of masked men roared, as did the drinkers outside the Leaping Trout. Cassidy could see more of the pub's patrons rushing out now that the festivities had started. The crowd at the top of Sunnyvale Road started chanting, "Jimmy! Jimmy! Jimmy!" The others soon took it up.
"Bugger this!"
Cassidy swung into the driver's seat, tossing her phone onto the dashboard. Norman hopped into the passenger seat beside her.
"All cars, pull back now! I'll pick up Reardon and Brennan."
She could faintly hear D.I. O'Rourke demanding an update over the phone, which she ignored. A glance in the rearview mirror showed her the crowd at the top of Sunnyvale Road, Darth Vader standing before them with a lit Molotov cocktail in his hand. He hurled it at them. Luckily, Darth wasn't anywhere near as good a shot as the first guy had been. Instead of hitting their car, it veered into the drive of a house two doors down, setting somebody's ice cream van ablaze. Cassidy walloped the button to turn on the blues and twos, while simultaneously slamming her foot down on the accelerator. As they pulled away, she caught the briefest glimpse of Darth Vader getting smacked upside the head by Homer Simpson. Somebody clearly liked ice cream. The crowd coming from Didsbury Road were heading towards the burning Garda car. At least they were, until they noticed the other Garda car heading straight for them.
"Butch?"
Most of the 20 or so figures turned in their direction. The smarter ones got out of the way. The cockier ones stayed in the road, chanting with arms aloft.
"Butch!"
Cassidy had long ago decided that the best way to bluff was not to bother. Cocksure bravery was no match for physics. At any point, even the dumbest of them realized she wasn't stopping. Bodies scattered as she threw the car into a sharp right turn. One fat kid in a gorilla mask got a thump off the back end as the car fishtailed around the corner. But he would live.
Christ!
Norman, on the other hand, looked like he'd aged a decade in the previous 15 seconds. He had his eyes closed and appeared to be having a one-sided conversation with Jesus. As she screeched the car to a halt, she saw a third group of trick-or-treaters at the top of Crossan Road, surging towards them. Rocks started raining down on the car, mostly from the front. The Didsbury Road crowd were temporarily distracted, picking each other up. Brennan and Reardon dived into the back seat. Tony Brennan getting a half brick to the shoulder for the privilege of being second. Before the door had even closed, Cassidy floored it. The crowd behind had regrouped and were running towards them, The bigger concern lay in front. One kid in a mask she didn't recognize was holding yet another Molotov cocktail as his mate tried to light it. She headed straight for them, banking on their fear trumping their bravery. Adrenaline pumping, Cassidy was dimly aware of Norman in the passenger seat, working his way through Hail Marys like they were going out of fashion.
"Hang on!"
The kids got the cloth to light when Cassidy was about 30 feet away. She could see the whites of their eyes as they looked up to see their intended victim barreling towards them. The chucker dropped his payload, setting his soon-to-be ex-buddy's leg alight in the process. They dived in opposite directions, as did their cohorts. If this was bowling, it would have been a strike. Not that they actually made contact. As the car hurtled through the sprouting flames, Butch's professionalism slipped momentarily, and she punched the roof.
"Yippee-ki-yay, mother humpers!"
As their car hurtled up Crossan Road, they passed a couple of motorbikes coming the other way. She had got her people out successfully, but Butch would stake her life on the fact that they had just lost their grip on the whereabouts of Franco Doyle and Tommy Carter.